inside. You know, the images of the horrors that she has seen and lived through over the last few days, just within that darkness, burning way too bright in her mind. But John has been preparing us from the very beginning of his narrative for this moment. He's framed his telling of Jesus' life around the creation narrative. Lovely. In the beginning. Because in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was in God, was with God, and the Word was God. It echoes the very beginning of our scripture, doesn't it? The start of it all. John's letter is filled with the very idea of hope and the breaking through of new creation. And throughout his writing, John leads us through the creation narrative, through the days, until we find ourselves in the middle of this terrible drama, the sixth day, with Jesus being brought out before the crowds by Pilate. "Here is the man," declares Pilate. And this is meant to be an echo once again, an ironic one this time, of on the original sixth day, when God declares, "This is man, humanity created in his image." And then later on that day, from the cross, Jesus cries out, "It is finished." John here gives us another echo from Genesis 2 this time, when the heavens and earth were completed in all their vast array. And then John leads us to sit where we've been in since the Monday-Thursday service. He leaves us to sit and imagine, to be in our discomfort on this, the seventh day, the Sabbath, the day of rest, but one where we find that the Word incarnate, the Word made flesh, was resting in the tomb. John leaves us there to sit, to feel the weight of it all, and then, in that darkness where we don't quite know how to be, he slowly brings us into a new day. Mary's come to the tomb, and it's still dark. The light's not yet risen, but it's a new day, the eighth day. It's the beginning of a new week, the beginning of a new creation, which Mary can't quite see yet. But John says it, again, that first verse, early on the first day of the week. While it is still dark, Mary Magdalene comes to the tomb, and she comes grieving. She comes weeping. And I think in her tears here, she represents this most beautiful, true daughter of Israel. You can almost sense that she's not just carrying her own sorrow, but the heaviness of the sorrow of Israel through generations. Once again, the hope which has come has been dashed. This is the long lament of a people who have known exile, who have known loss in their lives, who have come across circumstances and thought, "God, this was not what we expected." Who's ever experienced times in our lives like that? I know who you work with, yes. Maybe if you listen carefully in her sobbing, you can hear the laments from the psalmists coming through as well. As you read through the Psalms, you sometimes hear them writing that they're just lost. They're pulling close to God because everything else, all of their plans, have come to naught. They're at the end of it all. There is nothing left to do. She wept. And Mary sees this empty tomb. You know, this bit gives me great hope. Because she is the first to see the risen Jesus. But recognizing him takes her a step or two. It can take us a step or two to recognize where Jesus is in our circumstances. And she encounters angels through her tears, but she still doesn't understand. And she encounters Jesus. And through her tears, she still doesn't understand. She doesn't recognize him. And here in a garden, she thinks he's a gardener. Well, that's a reasonable mistake to make. I think it's exactly the right mistake to make. The risen Jesus stands before her as the true gardener. The one who tends, the one who restores, the one who brings life out of what seemed dead. It's the one who, through who and in who all things were made, that all things are now being held together, the one who is the first fruit of all creation. But Mary doesn't see it yet. Not until Jesus speaks her name. And it may not come through in your translation, but some of these modern translations pick up the difference. Because Jesus calls her by the name her family would have known her by. Not as the name, her public-facing name, but that intimate, knowing name. Miriam. And at that moment, everything changed. She turns and she cries out, Rabboni. Isn't it the most beautiful thing when you hear Jesus calling you by name? That you come to that moment in your life and you know that you are seen and that you are known by a God who knows your name. And this is one of those beautifully profound moments in scriptures that I love. I have too many of them. The reason why I love this bit is that Jesus doesn't rush past her grief. He doesn't tell her to stop crying. It's all okay. Look, I'm risen now. He doesn't dismiss her sorrow. He meets her just as he meets us within it. Just as he meets us within our distress today. Understanding that our tears and that our lament are important. And he understands what they signify. It's through her tears, not despite them, that she comes to recognize him. You know, Paul writes to the Romans about the groaning of all creation. That deep, aching, longing and sense that things are not as they should be. And yet, don't you find that it's not when things are great, but it's often there in that groaning that we become most aware of God's presence. You know, our tears aren't the evidence of Jesus' absence. I think they're often the substance through which he comes to us and we're able to recognize who he is. You know, Mary recognizes Jesus not when everything makes sense, when she felt better and when she could see the way ahead and understood that he had risen and what that would mean for them all, but when she heard her name spoken by the one who knew her. And that's how Jesus meets with us still today. He calls us by name. He knows us by name. And something fresh and new happens to Mary here, just as it often does when we encounter Jesus this way. And I think this morning especially, this grieving woman in tears at the tomb signifies what the whole church has done through the centuries. And her mourning gives way to dancing. Her grief gives way to joy. And she's commissioned. She's given a job to do, to go and tell the others that he, Jesus, will be ascending to the Father, his Father and their Father. And I'm struck by, as I was reading through it, by John's choice of language here. Because up until this time, as you're reading through John, usually when Jesus is speaking of God, he says, the Father. But something has happened on the cross, something has happened in that tomb and with the resurrection. And emphatically, Jesus here is saying, my Father and your Father. That unique relationship that Jesus had with the Father has now been thrown open and extended to all Jesus' followers. The picture I had in my mind in Cambodia, you knew that someone considered you a friend, family, when they would come into your house. And what would they do, Adam? What would you? Go straight to the refrigerator and open it. That's when you knew someone considered you a friend. He would probably say there is always a seat at the table for you. Through the cross and the resurrection, we are drawn into the family of God, given a place at the table. Always. We just have to open the door and there is a place there for us. Mary, this grieving woman at the tomb at the edge of night, has the darkness split open and becomes the first witness to the resurrection, this new creation. And she's the first to proclaim, he is risen. And I think Mary is entrusted with this most tremendous news, not because of status, not because of her position, but because she has recognized Jesus. And up to today, that's where all of our ministry begins. Not with our qualifications, not with our confidence, not with any competence or incompetence that we might have, but with the simple world-changing truth that we have come to recognize the risen Jesus for who he is. That he is Lord of the world. And so here's the question for us this Easter. Will we go... I had a great slide in there. The first witness. The question for us is, will we go as Mary did? Somewhere in my pocket, I was given an egg this morning. Who else was given an egg? Hopefully all of you should have. I wonder what you did with it as you received it. Did you take it with delight? Or did some of you refuse it, saying, nah, it's not for me this morning. I don't want it now, thank you. It's not the time. Did you put it in your pocket and forget about it until I mentioned it?
No.
Did you gobble it down hungrily and look for more? Did you share it with another person, maybe giving it to another? If the gospel, the good news, the truth of Jesus and the new creation was breaking in, was like this egg, I think Mary would have gobbled down the lot. She would have taken those baskets and said, more please. So will we allow our lives, our whole lives, our words, our actions, our witness, will we allow it to be rooted in that same announcement that Mary was told to go and share? Because we're all told to go and share it. That the Lamb who was slain is risen. We're going to have communion this morning. And as we come to communion this morning, and could it be in those spaces, could it be precisely there, in those places of lament, that Jesus is already waiting, that he is calling you by name? And as Mary was changed by this encounter, as she was called and known and sent, how is Jesus changing you? Are you living as a witness to that change, as a living testimony that the crucified Jesus is risen and is Lord of the world? So on the night he was betrayed, Jesus sat at the table with his disciples. And while they were eating, he took bread and he gave thanks. And he broke it and said, this is my body, given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And in the same way, after supper, he took the cup and he said, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Drink from it, all of you, in remembrance of me. We're going to take these ordinary things this morning, bread and juice, as we remember that God meets us in the ordinary and he makes it extraordinary. The children are going to help pass around the communion elements this morning. And I'd ask that as you get them, it may be a little bit slow and it may be a little bit chaotic, but this is a new day and we are learning new things. So I'd ask that as you get the elements, that you hold them until everybody has them today, and I will pray.